from Atwood Magic Studios, from beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. It's the Dave Atwood Show.
The Dave Atwood Show.
Joining Dave in the studio is the most tattooed magician in Victoria, Steve Hignett. Now, here he is, the magic man himself, David J. Atwood.
Thank you so much for downloading the show and sharing with all your friends and letting them know what's going on here up in beautiful, gorgeous Langford, British Columbia. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
I'm good, Dave. How you doing, man?
I am loving spring. Spring is coming on, and we have, maybe not because you're not a native to Victoria.
No, I'm not.
But I am. Mm-hmm. And I know that twice a year we have our winds. We have a wind that comes twice a year, once in spring, once in late fall, early winter. And the wind is always a little reminder to say, hey, good times are coming. Yeah. And the wind was blowing the last couple of days.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm coming out to the studio tonight, I look up, I'm thinking, we've got a Widowmaker basically hanging over right over top of Atwood Magic Studios.
That was a doozy too, wasn't it?
It was a big one.
Oh my gosh.
And you know what? I thought about it. I was sitting there thinking, if it was early enough, I was going to call you and say, don't bother coming over. I'm going to call some guys and get a tree service, get someone to take care of this, because this is going to hurt someone when it comes down.
Oh yeah. That was 8-9 inches around, that thing was.
But it was a big part of the tree.
And it was long.
It was very long. Yeah. And anyways, it's up in the tree, and I see it, and I go, maybe calling, you know, a tree service is maybe that's too much. I can do this myself.
I'm a man.
Well, yeah, you know, but I'm thinking, all I can think of is, like, they call it a widowmaker for a reason.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know what a widowmaker is, it's a broken branch that is hanging up in the tree, and it's hung up there. And the reason they call it widowmaker is because it falls down and kills loggers. And you know, magicians. That's what happens.
The occasional podcaster.
Yeah. So I start pulling on it, and then I hear this lovely angelic voice behind me. Hey, what are you doing? Oh, you got yourself a widowmaker up there. So you and I heaving and hauling at this thing because it was blocking the door to the studio.
Yeah, we couldn't get in.
And pull it down, and we had a casualty.
Well, not a big deal. I think we missed hitting the studio by less than a foot.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The ripped up t-shirt on me is really not a big deal.
Yes, but it was funny. I look over and like I said, it looked, from my angle, it looked like you were impaled. Like, because the way the branch went around you, I honestly, it looked like one of those, you know, like the Steve Martin arrow through the head thing. It was like, oh my God, I'm calling 911.
If I was impaled, you would have been the first to know, man.
Yeah, well.
I would have made noises that I've never made
before.
Yeah,
but you're such a tough guy. I figured you'd probably just take and go, yep, that feels like my bladder.
Yeah, got a tree through my colon.
Yeah, right. There you go. Gotta do this, Dave. I don't got time to bleed.
Jesse Ventura style, right?
Yeah. Let's do this podcast, but then right after, I think I gotta get this looked at.
Well, fortunately, a little ripped T-shirt. No blood was drawn on either of us, and we saved the studio.
And the studio is saved, so we can record another night. And I'm so excited because tonight we have Steve Spill,
so rad,
from Magicopolis, going to be joining us. Oh. And what a guy!
I love that place too, man.
Love. I got a photo of him and his Eleonora. She was the assistant in the show that we saw. Yeah. You and I saw back in 2009.
Yeah.
The guy's just one of those guys. He had this duck routine that I think the peeing duck, where the duck pees all over the eyes. The mind reading duck.
Yeah.
Is that his routine?
As far as I know, that's his. Yeah.
Beautiful routine that he does with this mind-reading duck. And it's such a great routine, and it plays for all ages, and it played for the entire theater, which is hilarious. He's just a funny guy.
Yeah, I loved his show. Paper Balls Over the Head, he had a hilarious routine with that. And then, of course, he had the spikes.
Yeah, the spikes.
Spike illusion.
The table of death, or the deathbed of spikes, whoever. Andrew Cole originally came up with that illusion, but it might be a different take on it. But I just remember before that illusion was brought out, he says, if there's anyone here who might be frightened, and then this army of six-year-olds ran out of the
They were terrified.
It was great. Anyways, you were working this week.
I was, yeah. Not very well.
Well, this is the thing. I thought we might want to just touch on this really quick before Steve gets joins us. But one of the things that happens when you're working close up, especially if you're a pub or a restaurant magician and you have a regular weekly gig, one of the things that tends to happen, especially in this neck of the woods, is hockey.
Yeah, this time of year for sure.
Oh, my God. We up here, we love our hockey. I mean, we're Canucks, we're Canadians, we love our hockey. And the worst thing for a walking, strolling entertainer in a pub is game night.
Oh, man. And did I face that last week? And here's the thing. Now, you say that Canucks are all hockey fans and stuff. I don't know a thing about it. I had no idea hockey was even still on. I'm not joking.
They still play that game?
I knew they played it, but I thought it was over by now. I mean, the Suns, it's nice out. You don't have to wear a jacket. I don't know. I just don't pay attention.
You're just not a fan.
No.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Yeah, but I walked into the pub, all ready to go, pockets packed, ready for a good night. And the pub is full of people in hockey jerseys singing the national anthem along with the TV.
Mm.
And I thought, well, I'm doomed.
Yep.
And I was.
Yeah, and you were.
I went to one table, the one table that wasn't watching the hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, they made enough noise that the manager noticed the magician had showed up. And he said, oh, you know, I should have sent you an email. We're gonna wave you off for the night. And I said, man, you just saved my bacon, man.
Yeah, he just threw you a line, didn't he?
Well, it was a total life preserver because there was no way I could have done 2.5 hours fighting playoff hockey in Canada when the local to Vancouver was playing that night.
Yeah.
And here we are in Victoria, right, you know, it's like the home team.
Well, it's the same with the Heckler's Comedy Club. Like, we've as you and I have been part of the organization, Victoria Magic Circle, we've put on shows there at the Hecklers.
Yeah.
And they flat out said, if it's a game night, don't even bother because we don't want you here. And
of course not.
Everyone knows that's where everyone's going to go to the pub to watch the game. Everyone's going to.
It was packed that night.
It is tough. It is tough. But what? Let's. I mean, I've had to deal with that, and all you can really do is shorten your set. Go in with the mind busting, grab them by the throat opener, get your closer in as quickly as possible, and then get out.
Yeah.
You can't do your Sam the Bellhop routine or anything like that.
It's very difficult to do anything even with patter.
That's what I'm saying.
It's so loud.
Yeah.
It's so loud.
There are going to be people that are going to be dragged to the game.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't want to be
guys like
misogynistic, but there are going to be some girls that are huge fans who are going to drag their boyfriends who are not fans of hockey and vice versa. Yeah. Believe it or not, there are some women that might not be. They have a good time for this. And that's fine. And you can try to play to those people, but even if there's one guy at the table who's engrossed in the game, and hockey is such a fast game. It's not like football or curling or golf where there's some breaks in between, there's some downtime. It is boom, boom, boom. It never stops. And that's the thing. The only time it stops is between periods.
Yeah.
So
they're not listening to the magician then either. They're listening. They're going back up to the bar to get, you know, round number five.
Oh yeah. They're hauling, calling the waitress over and the waitress. I mean, that's another thing. Another one of the combatants we have to deal with in the battlefield of doing close-up magic in a pub. Yeah. The waitress, she's there trying to make a buck. So she's trying to get food there as quick as possible. Yeah. And she's going to be always throwing stuff on top of your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You got
to
be in
and
out.
You get used to that. I'm not, you know, that doesn't concern me. But, man, fighting against the sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. You know what? I like this, though. Is we're actually talking about this because in so few forums online online especially no forums, do magicians ever talk about when things go wrong?
No, because
they always have something better to say. I could have improved this or that.
Oh, you know what you should have done? But the truth is, most people say, well, you know, in the hindsight, in the safety, in the comfort of my living room, where I have complete control of the outcome, they always have something that you could do better.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could always throw a ball of fire onto the table and get everyone's attention. That, you can always do things like that.
Yeah.
But as a close-up magician, you're always competing against the surroundings, the environment, and you're trying to break in where they didn't go there. For the most part, most people don't go to the Strathcona Hotel in Victoria, British Columbia, to see the close-up magician.
No, no, no. We're value added, if anything.
Exactly. We're like the fact that the waitresses wear bow ties, right? It's a nice thing, yeah. Right? I mean, they go there for the good nachos, the great service, the good beer, and the game.
To watch the game, yeah.
And yeah, this guy comes by and shows us some great magic. It blows our minds, and it makes it a memorable night. Yeah. But that's not why we ended up here in the first place.
That's not the reason for the night out, no.
Yeah.
But here we are actually admitting things that go wrong.
Yeah.
And I openly admit it. That evening went wrong, and... Feel free to post on our Twitter or post on our Facebook what you think you would have done.
Yeah, how would you, the listener, handle game night at the bar? I mean,
in Canada, local hockey team,
Yeah, the house team is playing. What's happening? Anyways, we got Steve coming up here in a second. I'm so excited to have him.
Great.
Steve is the owner and operator of Magicopolis down in Santa Monica, in California, and he's. I've always felt him to be one of the like, he still has a brick-and-mortar magic shop.
Yeah.
Like, he still sells magic. Mm-hmm. And he hires someone to actually display the magic. Mm-hmm. And I loved going there. And even as magicians, he's doing the karate coin. He's doing this Bengali deck. And you can tell this poor guy is like, it's a convention that has literally fallen upon him. And he's basically... He's been pawning, like, the Royal Magic cups and balls for all his life.
Introductory stuff,
and now all these people are coming in. But still, you know what? Steve is still operating one of the few brick-and-mortar places out there. And not only that, but still a full theater show.
Yeah.
And
what a great theater. And what a great location, too. In Santa Monica, I mean, it's just, what, two blocks off of the promenade?
Right there at the pier. It's great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, you go see a show, go to the pier, grab a hot dog, go on the little Ferris wheel, do the roller coaster.
Exactly what I did last time I was there.
It was a good time. Yeah. Anyways, we're going to take a quick little break. We're going to grab some new drinks here, and we'll be back with Steve Spill.
Thanks for listening to the show. Our marketing is relying on you to share the show with your friends. That is how we keep the lights on here at Atwood Magic Studios. Getting all your friends to share our show on Facebook and tweet about us on Twitter helps us put together quality shows week after week. Another great way to support us is to go to atwoodmagic.com. Go to the sponsors page and click on that Amazon banner. They sell everything on Amazon and all your purchases are at the same great low price. It doesn't take any longer to get to you, and we just get a little love. Thanks for listening. And thanks for spreading the word.
And we're back. And online with us is none other than the owner-operator from Magicopolis from Santa Monica, California, Steve Spill. Hello, Steve.
Good to be here, man. Happy to be with you, David, and Steve.
Now, I am so excited to have... Now, Steve, you started out as a magic bartender working in Aspen.
Well, actually, I started out as a young boy in hanging around the Magic Castle with guys like Di Vernon and Francis Carlisle and Kuda Bucks and Charlie Miller and so on. And I was tutored by those guys from 10, 11 years old on. And that was really the germ of magic that grew into doing the bar. So it was probably, I figured it out, you know, I happened to be the cover boy in the current Genie magazine. And the guy wrote a startling fact there. I've been in magic 50 years. And that's about what the start was. But, you know, as far as working professionally on a day-to-day basis, week after week, month after month, year after year, that was the bartending gig in Aspen. And it was a lot of fun. Bob Sheets was sort of my mentor. He not only taught me how to attend bar, but how to sell a lot of drinks. And it was a pretty wild time. That was from like 76 I started there.
Well, the funny thing is, it was Doc Eason who said that our job is not to entertain, it's to sell whiskey.
Well, that's true. One of our most popular drinks was the upside-down margarita. We used to have the patrons lay their head back down on their bar, open their mouth real wide, and with a bottle in each hand, we'd pour first some triple sec and sweet and sour, and then some tequila and Rose's lime in their mouth, and then they would just sit up and swallow. So that was a very popular drink. This is long before the, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving and all that stuff. We overserved everybody. And if someone tipped in advance when the person sat up, they would get a cream pie in their face. It was actually a coffee filter filled with whipped cream. That was one of our specialty drinks.
Oh, there you go. Good time.
Oh, my God. I'm going to be in Los Angeles in the middle of June, and I'm gonna find some place that can get me an upside-down margarita.
Yeah, I'm not sure that those are popular anymore, but I have a lot of great stories from my bartending days in the book I Lie for Money, which is be in stores nationwide in the United States May 12th. I think it's going to be in Canada and the UK in June, but you could order it on Amazon today if you wanted.
Well, of course. The best way to do that, of course, is to go through atwoodmagic.com and click on the Amazon banner. It doesn't cost any of our listeners any more. They get your beautiful book, I Lie for Money, and we just get a little love.
Hey, I highly recommend that. If they each buy a book, that'll be great, because then I can probably afford to get lunch somewhere, you know. Maybe I'll even come up and have lunch with you guys in B.C. You know, a couple of times I've been to Canada, but not lately. So it's overdue. I have to come up and visit you guys and do the next podcast in person.
Oh, my God, yes, yes. And I tell you, everyone in Victoria would love to get a chance to hang out with Steve Spill for an afternoon.
I think that's the reason I won't be coming. But they're very hospitable up in the Great White North. In fact, I remember at a lot of the stops, the local magic club would have like a dinner for us or we would meet with them the day before or after the show. No, they're really hospitable.
Man, that is us. That is us Canadians. We are just loving, peaceful, polite people.
And we treat our magicians very well.
I see that. Yeah, well, that's why I'm on your show. the Aspen thing was really a lot of fun. And it was a wild sort of time, the 70s. And we had a lot of, celebrities that would come in, that would pop in. It's kind of like Banff. It's a big ski resort, if you're not familiar. And you mentioned Dockies. And Doc was kind of just starting to learn magic. He was kind of the busboy at the Jolly Jester. What happened was Bob Sheets started at the Tower Restaurant in Snowmass, just a few miles, like 5 miles outside of Aspen. Like in 75, and he became a popular local legend, and a guy sponsored him, and he opened his own bar in Aspen, and that's when I came along. And Doc, who had been working at the Tower Restaurant as a waiter, kind of picked up and became very interested in magic over the course of the time that Bob was there, and was kind of still learning when he picked up that gig, and he was there, I don't know, 30 years or something, quite some time, you know. One story that was not in the book, but I'm going to practice telling it to you now so that when I do it on Howard Stern, it will be really practiced up well.
Nice.
One of the days that so every once in a while, the bar would be rented out for a private party. And Bob and I did a bachelor party. And if you could picture like a dozen guys under the influence of cocaine and booze and this is about 1976, 77. And there's about two dozen of the most beautiful, gorgeous women, you know, in the world. And the only thing on these women were the eyes of the men. Actually, that's what I meant. What I meant is the only thing on the guys were the men. And many of these guys, they're only wearing smiles. And this buyout was like a trust fund kid's hardcore bachelor party. And
right.
there was, you know, nothing soft in the room. No way our magic could compete with this, you know, the girls' tricks. But doing a few tricks was like a required part of the deal. Apparently that way the attendees could honestly tell their wives and girlfriends that, you know, the evening's entertainment was the magic show at the Jolly Jester. That was the name of the bar.
You were the alibi.
Yeah, exactly. And you might be familiar with one of the tricks that I popularized, the Doc also does, my version of the lemon trick, where you have where the signed money disappears. Appears in a lemon, and with a large pair of roach clips or barbecue tongs, you reach in there and pull the bill out of the lemon.
Yep. Well,
on this, if you imagine, it's the bachelor party. It's about midnight, and I was the magician, and there was a sweet young thing of, blonde hair or brown hair. I don't know, who remembers. Big eyes.
She had hair.
She had hair.
She played the part of the lemon. And she sat on, not at the bar, facing the party. And the soon-to-be married bachelor provided a crisp new $100 bill.
Okay.
And a guest with no pants was able to just free a hand long enough to autograph the money.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, and that...
The signed note, the $100, vanished at my fingertips. And my human lemon, the girl, let out a little scream of pleasure. And I held her hand and sweetly asked our little tiny girl with long brown hair if she felt anything. And she removed her sparkly hot pink colored thong and said she felt a tiny bit richer. And when the young lady opened her legs and spread her vaginal lips, there was a little speck of green in there. I had no pun intended about my king when, you know, you could see it. And then using the roach clips, our bachelor delicately pinched the green speck and pulled out the autographed hunter.
So I can't stop laughing. We're going to have to edit me laughing out of this.
The guy who signed it was not available to verify his signature, but I think he liked the trick because I heard him let out a little groan of ecstasy.
Wow. Well,
the thing is this. I guess that those roach clips were kind of sticky from spending a lot of time stuck in lemons.
And of course.
Apparently some DNA stuck to the end of them. And the next night, I was, you know, once again behind the bar doing the lemon. I'm just finishing the lemon trick, the normal version of the lemon trick. And using the clips, I tell the spectators, you know, using the clips, reach inside so everyone can see that bill come out of the fruit. And the guy interrupts and says, why are the end of the clips covered with all these tiny little hairs? And I just, you know, Bob and I are already cracking up, you know. And I just kind of matter of fact said, you know, it's an old Brazilian trick. And I joke, you know, about the Brazilian bikini wax joke there was only made sense to the employees, the few employees that were there like the day before. Oh, but we were like doubled over with laughter from the, you know, the moment the guy asked about the hairs. And, you know, that kind of gives you a good idea what it was like tending bar in Aspen. We had so many crazy things that, you know, that, but I think that, I don't think I could top that story for the moment, you know. I think that was, and on the off season, do you guys know who Johnny Fox is?
Oh, yeah.
Swords follower?
Yeah.
On the off season, I used to go busking coast to coast with Johnny Fox. And he was just, this was before actually he was a sword swallower. He was actually a coin man at that time. And he was really, did like a lot, he was a devotee of Slidini. He did a lot of David Roth, like the hanging coins and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
And a lot of his first street shows he did on that busking tour. I kind of more went in the evening to bars and would, you know, do tricks and pass the hat. And then he would kind of be my, you know, supporter. And in the daytime, he mostly did the street. And, you know, I was kind of his supporter. And one of this is in San Antonio, Texas. I'm walking down the downhill toward this park. And at the bottom of the park, I see Johnny Fox there. I've been gone for a couple hours scouting out bars I might go to that night. And he's there doing his close-up coin thing. And, you know, usually you might, you know, and kind of have like 15 people watching him if it was a really good hat. And I'm, or pitch or whatever. And I'm walking down this hill and there's like 100 people around him. I couldn't believe it. I'm thinking, man, this somehow just burst through, you know? And as I'm getting closer, I noticed that there's like 10 people around him watching him do the hanging coins. But most of the people are looking across the street. There's like a 10-story building, and there's a guy standing on it. And it's like going to jump, you know. But Johnny and the people right in the immediate vicinity of him are just watching him do close-up magic, you know. And as I was unbelievable because, first of all, the guy did jump.
Oh.
And, yeah, it's like a thing that you never forget when you're, like, you know, you have even wake up and have that dream maybe. And this is, you know, 40 years ago.
Jesus.
I didn't see the landing because there's a lot of people, and it was like on the other side of the street, but you could actually feel through the earth like the impact of that thud kind of. Yeah, it was really, and you know, believe it or not, after that, when we were driving to like New Orleans, after we were joking around, like the guy drew a big crowd, you know, he didn't pass the hat, you know.
Well, you know, they say that what makes a crowd is a crowd.
Exactly right. Yeah. Well, he didn't realize that at the time. He really was, his back was to that, and he was intrigued, you know, by what was going on in his close-up magic act, you know, more than he was behind him. But it was definitely a devastating sort of, it's something that you would never forget for sure, you know.
Wow. But,
yeah. Well, you know, after those days, after the bar and that stuff, Bob and I wanted to kind of a little bit get out from behind the bar. And we opened a dinner theater. It was called the Brook Farm Inn of Magic. It was actually the Brook Farm Inn. It had like a historical landmark attachment. So that had to be part of the title. And it was in Chevy Chase, Maryland, in the D.C. area. And we did for 5 years, Bob and I kind of developed our more stage personas and stuff there. And that was also a lot of fun. And we did a couple illusions and, you know, alternated doing our solo stuff and so on. So I'm not sure if what I'm going to encourage you guys to do is read the book, I Lie for Money, Candid Outrageous Stories from a Magician's Misadventures, and go through the Dave Atwood website on Amazon and go hook that up, because there are a lot of great stories in there.
You kind of stopped us in our tracks, man. You just told two of the craziest stories
we've ever heard.
We've ever heard doing this show.
We've ever heard on this show, yeah.
You know, I have a good one from the Brook Farm Inn. One of the things we used to do was the sub trunk. And, you know, I was about maybe 24, 25 then, years old. And Bob's a few years older. He's maybe 30. And he would dress up like Bess Houdini, like in drag. And I would be Harry Houdini in one of like those old-fashioned bathing suits. And we would do the sub trunk. That was like our closer to our show, you know. And one day, I think I had a Mexican lunch or something. I'm in the box. I'm chained in there. And I cut this huge fart. I mean, you know, it's just like skanked, like inside of the box. It was right before the switcheroo. And I kind of slipped and, you know, as it turned out, I didn't find out till later, you know, have like the adrenaline flow, you know, when you do the show. I had actually fractured my ankle doing this. But we finished the show, and Bob's in there, you know, with like this horrible fart, you know. And the people are really slow, you know, getting the chains off. We had spectators help us get the chains off, to open it up, you know. And his eyes are watering, and, you know, I'm like leaping on this broken thing, like very slowly getting my hand. And so, you know, he's out, and, you know, we got to get him out quick. When I was in the box, I broke wind, you know, and the audience thinks it's really funny, and I keep that in the routine and so on. But, you know, the middle of the night, I have, like, this grapefruit-sized, you know, thing on the side of my foot. I had taken, like, a bunch of Advil PM and crashed out, and I remember when I woke up because it was, like, this big throbbing kind of, you know. So I get this plaster cast on my leg and everything. And, you know, I can still do the show, but I can't really do the sub trunk, you know. And we had a lot of table hoppers in those days, and one of them was John Kennedy,
the
great magic trick. Yeah, actually, you know, the guys that did the tables, close up at the tables before the show, was John Kennedy, Tim Connor, and David Williamson.
Holy
and Scotty York was the magic bartender. These
wow.
all guys came really, you know, very skilled guys.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you do a lot of shows. So anyways, I have, so John Kennedy is going to do the stand-in for me. I'm going to do the dialogue with Bob, because John was kind of shy. He doesn't really talk that much, you know. But he's going to sort of play me as Houdini. And I'm talking, and he's actually doing the trick with Bob. And I'm on the side there with my cast on my leg. And one of the bits that we had in the show is that Bob would slam the lid down on me when I got in, and it looked like my hand got smashed in there. And then, you know, he would lift up the lid, and it was a rubber hand, and we sung like a couple bars of Macho Macho Man. That was like one of the bits in the show.
Nice.
So, when we did the sub trunk, it was like 25 minutes. It was like a really long,
wow.
Like, well, you know, it was a comedy kind of thing. So, and you know, so he smashes it, and you know, it's John Kennedy has the rubber hand, it comes out, but I'm the one that's singing Macho Macho Man. It's just very esoteric how it worked out. Well, the day comes when John really, he really does catch a finger in that and like breaks a finger.
Oh no.
So now we're not, you know, we just had to put the Houdini bit on hiatus for a long time. Is that like 6 weeks I had to wear that cast? But we had a lot of great stuff. The, you know, one of the really great things is in the summer, the door to our bar, which was not the door to the dinner theater, was like a big square of frosted glass. And at night, from the outside, it would be like a big glowing square. And in the summer, a ton of moths used to collect on that. And I used to always be able to do, I'm sure you guys know, the Creation of Life, kind of a different version than what Andrew Goldenhurst does now.
Yeah.
But I used to be able to get big fuzzy moths and tear up a little cocktail napkin and make it into a little moth and have it fly was great. But only in the summer, you know, during that certain few weeks when there was a ton of moths on that.
Yeah.
So anyways, at that point, somewhere after that, but, you know, the Brook Farm closed. And then I didn't really do the two-man show with Bob again. But we were still, you know, lifelong friends, and he visits me here. After that, I embarked on the comedy clubs were, you know, very popular in the mid-'80s. And that's when I started originally working at the Yuck Yucks, but also all of the other ones that are not only here in Los Angeles, but across the country and in Canada. And that gave me a new lease on life. That's when I kind of developed, you know, the mind-reading goose and started doing the needles for my closer and some of the things that are more familiar to some of the magicians, you know. So, and I got to hang out and learn a lot from, you know, spending time on the road with various comedians. That led me to doing more casino shows. I was in a number of review shows and opening act for celebrities and stuff like that. And the comedy club thing is kind of the training ground for that, you know. That's how you got good enough to be in one of those shows. And one of the ones I did a long time was Spellbound, which I did for almost 3 years. And it's a show that I first did it with the Pendragons and Carlton and Company. They were like, the show is like a battle of illusionists. And then there's a specialty act that's, you know, the comedy guy. And that's the only guy that talks. So like when I did it with and the Pendragons were all in white, and Carlton Company that has all the tigers are all in black, and they go back and forth and, you know, do their thing. The later version I did with Tim Cole, Andre Cole's son. He was the kind of the Pendragon-ish guy. And Mark Kalin was the guy with the tigers. And he had like, and you know, these are Hollywood rent tigers. He had a Black Panther that he used on his own for, you know, but most of the other tigers, the other 2 600-pound Bengal tigers and the leopard and so on, are like from a Hollywood showbiz agency that rents big cats, you know, for stuff. And they, you know, they supply like the trainers and the handlers and all that stuff.
Sure.
So I did this show with those guys in South Africa, okay? And also at Lake Tahoe, in another casino. And I started doing the show as a fill-in for Mark Kornhauser at Knott's Berry Farm, which is like an amusement park, like a Disneyland kind of
thing. Yeah, we know about it,
By the way, I did the show. So those are the three places I did the show. And in South Africa, one other detail. I'm skipping around a lot, but I know some of the things I want to tell you about some tigers' stories, you know. 30-pound, like, you know, just a couple months old. There's a group bow at the end, and there's the Kalin and the Tim Cole, and, you know, we've made the cars appear, and the tigers have all that stuff. And there's a group bow. And then at the very end, they thought the director and the producer, who's Dick Foster, was the producer, the director, I forget his name, David Gravatt, I think. The little tiger runs on, and it's kind of cute, and everybody giggles, and they think it's really funny. This is it. We're doing this show at a place called the Wild Coast. It's on the Indian Ocean in South Africa. It's like in the middle of the jungle. And it's the only resort there. And people go there from Europe or other places to see, you know, to see animals and take a jungle cruise and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
It's even brand new. The casino's just open. We're the first show there, Spellbound, from Las Vegas, you know. Johannesburg is about 2 hours from there.
Sure.
And the little baby tiger, you know, like a dog-carrying thing, an animal handler, and myself and a pilot are flying from the casino in like a four-seat plane, a little tiny plane that's taking off from like the side of the, you know, most of the people are limoed or bussed in from Durban or Johannesburg, but like the really super VIP gamblers and stuff, you know, they have like the little airstrip, you know, for them. Oh,
cool.
So we're taking this, and there's a little tiny baby tiger, and there's me in the back seat. The tiger's in a little carrier, like a dog carrier. There's the girl, who's like a pretty girl that's not really a trainer. She's like a handler. Really someone that cleans up after the animals and stuff like that. And the pilot. Then we're going there because we're going to be on a talk show in Johannesburg. And they're going to, you know, also part of the thing is they're going to show the little baby tiger. And isn't that cute? And that's also in the show. We're flying along. And you guys have been in a small plane before where it like drops like 20 feet while you're flying. And, you know, your guts kind of go back up in your rib cage. And,
oh, yeah.
So, you know, we're flying there. It's a color, and it's a tiny plane. And, you know, it does that a few times. And this little baby tiger is like, they're upset, you know. And sure. The girl is like the really lucky sort of girl, and she wants to. She opens the little carrier so she can grab the little tiger and cuddle it. And in about 1 second, this little tiger is on the pilot's head, sideways, and you know we're gonna die. I mean, it's just like, you know, that's, you know. Well, fortunately, we wrestled the little tiger back into the thing, and you know, we made it. And when we do the show, I do my little bit, and then at the end of the next guest is, oh, and we have the little tiger from the thing. It jumps on the guy's desk. The show, it's just like a talk show anywhere in the world. There's like the funny guy host with the desk, and, you know, you're on the couch talking to the guy.
Yeah, of course.
And she brings out the little tiger, and the first thing, he jumps on the guy, you know. he's on the desk, because, you know, it's a little kid. He doesn't know, it's a little baby tiger, you know.
He's still a tiger.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And, yeah. You know, even they're playful, you know, when they get older. I mean, when I was at Lake Tahoe, they switched the trainer. I saw a big, you know, 600-pound tiger just take a playful swipe at a guy and rip his throat out. I mean, these are really strong animals, you know. A lot of people think, you know, that there must be drugged or they took their teeth out or something, you know. Even, you know, a big tiger, you can still gum you to death, even if he doesn't have teeth. You know, I mean, it's not. But, and then, so we're doing that group bow one sometime after, subsequent to that, and the tiger, the little baby tiger jumps in the audience. And that was the last, I mean, no one got hurt or anything, but that was the last sort of, you know, it's a big deal, you know, I could tell you one story, but I'm going to leave out the name, but a tiger story, and then we have to move on to non-tiger stories.
Sure.
There was a fella in the show that had like the really sexy girl in the black outfit, like crawling around like a wild animal. And she gets into this glass box and the magician covers the box with a cloth and he whips it away. And now there's like a black panther in there instead of the girl in the tight black dress.
Yeah, I got you. Cool.
Yeah. And this trick is like the, I think it's called maybe the tabaret or something, whatever it's called. Under the cover of the cloth, the glass box kind of slides down, and the girl squeezes into the base, and she's protected from the tiger, and he whips away, and there's the tiger. Hmm? But she's not really protected from the tiger's urine.
Oh, and, Jesus.
You know, every once in a while, you know, I mean, you realize, you do a casino show, we're doing 12 shows a week, you know, I don't know how many times this happened, but a few times. You know, before he's even covering up the thing, you seem like a bright yellow wash go against that glass box. And, you know, if you're in the audience, you don't know. Maybe that's part of the trick. I don't even know there's going to be a tiger here. But, you know, the girl is like in a sewer of warm panther urine in the base of that box, getting soaked, you know, her hair or body. And, and the way that the finish of the thing is, you know, it isn't just like they roll that box off stage. No, they walk the tiger along the apron of the stage.
Oh, sure, yeah, they want to show it.
On the 2 feet, and they, you know, like he's standing up, and they give him some meat, and, you know, like it's a big deal, because it's a tiger.
It's a tiger,
a panther, you know. But I'll tell you something, you know, and this girl, I mean, it would be stinking for life. I mean, you can't, this does not wash out really quick. No. If you can imagine, like, the really hot, like, Playboy centerfold girl, but, like, it smells like panther piss. That's, you know, I mean, she would have a hard time. She would just like, she was, it roared louder than the you know, the tigers at feeding time. Oh, God. It was like a big, you know.
Oh, my God.
Actually, I have one other good Spellbound screw up. And, you know, remember, these are very odd. Like I mentioned about the, you know, these are things that didn't happen every show. I'm just giving you some of the you know, the funny highlights.
The highlights. Yeah, we get it.
One of the things that was like at the end of the first half of the show, the two big magicians, the you know, I told you, it's like a battle of the magicians. In this case, it was Mark Kalin and Tim Cole and their girls and their entourages and stuff. There, one of the sponsors, I think who printed the program, was the Nissan company. And they make it like a big Nissan car appear, yeah. You know, on the thing.
Yeah, sure.
And there's like a white picket fence. And behind the picket fence, the car is just like a shell of a car on a big skateboard.
Yeah.
And it's covered with a, you know, like a vinyl cloth that has a black velvet. And with the right lighting, the black art thing happens. And there's like the puff of smoke. And the little white picket fence opens. And a bunch of guys hooded in black, you know, push it forward. And then get out of the way. And the fence closes. And then boom, there's the car, you know. And there's a pre-recorded thing going, the Nissan Maxima, built better to last longer. You know, it's like a commercial, you know. And as a matter of fact, I even did this. There was like at a Nissan convention, we also did this thing that was like we were sub, you know, we did a few times also. But anyway, that's part of the regular show. So this one time, the timing is like way off, you know. And like I said, this is like a flimsy, like, you know, like a vacuum form almost, you know, like plastic. I mean, the heaviest thing of the car is like the girl. A showgirl gets out of the car and, you know, waves, you know, the door opens and she waves at it. And, the Nissan Maxima, built better to last longer, you know. And so one of the times, the timing is really off. And the cloth gets caught like on the corner of the thing, and the guy stumbles, and the stage hands, and you know, it's off, you know, like the car door falls off, and as they're whisking the like the cloth away, you know, the bumper goes with it. And it was a really, you know, the Nissan Maxima, built better to last longer, you know.
And it's falling to pieces?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, this is after many, you know, we probably did it 200 times. They worked great. But, you know, that one time was not.
Oh, wow. I bet you Nissan had something to say about that one.
The audience that day or not. But, you know, that was kind of. Anyway, so I had a lot of fun doing that show. And
so how did you get from there to owner operator of Magicopolis in Santa Monica?
Well, you know, I was about 40 years old. And I was, you know, busy. I enjoyed living in Santa Monica, but I was like in my own bed, like, you know, like 6 days, you know, a month quite often. And there were a few things that really, I'm flying a plane thinking about this. And, you know, I, for one thing, none of the shows that I'm doing, whether it's even a headlining at a comedy club or being a opening act in a you know, casino show or even a corporate event, nobody's coming to see me. Okay. They're, you know, it's just sort of a lot of those things. Like you go to a comedy club, you don't even expect the guy that's topping the show to be a magician. So one of the things is I wanted to kind of do something where people showed up expecting to see me, you know, or at least a magician. And number two, I wanted to be able to do a long show and to be able to experiment with a lot of, you know, not be a lot of these shows, you know, especially a casino one, you do 12 minutes or 18 minutes and you can't do 19 minutes. It's like right to the minute, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you, so anyways, I was traveling a lot, but, you know, I had several things, you know, I wanted to like try and stay home and have the audiences find me instead of going around finding them. Yeah. All these things kind of rolled around in my head while I was, you know, on planes and in cars and hotel rooms and eating. You know, I'm just constantly thinking about this and I'm going back and forth about it a lot. At one point I'm thinking, you know, yeah, it'll be great. And then the next minute I'm racked with doubt. Like, what do I know about supervising construction and decoration and plumbing and electrical and organizing suppliers and equipment and staff and arranging publicity and advertising and printing and, you know, all the lights and sound and, you know.
Yeah, the real meat and potatoes of it. Oh, yeah.
I've mostly been an act, you know. Yeah. So, you know, there was like a million reasons not to do it. And I just, at one point, I just ignored all of them. And those reasons just kind of went by the wayside. And I kind of a little bit flew by the seat of my pants doing that. I started drinking, guzzling triple espressos and, not devoting all my time to, not doing things that I normally enjoy doing, like eating and sleeping and breathing, or just working on that project. And it took me a few years to get that together. And then that's kind of it, And I started doing the show. At first, the first year and a half, I mostly had other people do the show while I was jiggling the business side together with my wife, Bozina. I can't remember the day you came. She has a couple understudies. When you guys came to the show, if she was in the show with me or not. But she is a really genius actress and really funny and stuff. And she might have been at one of her understudies that was in the show when you came. I'm thinking kind of that it was, if I remember correctly. But so she and I are kind of partners in crime. And I had met her. I had just was getting this together. I had the building. I was gutting the building. And then I fall in love, what happened, I was at Igby's, a West LA comedy club, and my act had gone well, and I came off stage, and I saw her by the bar smiling at me, and what can I tell you, she looked like she could give a man something that he really needed, and she was, she made me complete, I ended up falling in love, and by the way, she's a Polish, so this is a Polish accent. And when we first met, her accent wasn't as Americanized as it is now. So when she said my name, instead of Steve, it sounded like stiff. And everyone, within earshot, always thought I was a real stud muff. And she's going, stiff, stiff, like, and which I was perfectly willing to accept, But so she became my kind of partner in crime. We would go there at night and like spray paint on the ground where the walls would be or over the stage or the dressing room, and probably I would not have the place or have the confidence to make it all these years without having a partner, like that. And it was just fortuitous that I could, I was already on the path of building it and opening the place, and were it not for her, it wouldn't exist today. That's how much confidence and help and so on. And during the show, she's really funny. She's really great, and she's a terrific performer. And I just was just fortuitous that we. So, anyways, that's how the kind of the just how the play started. And when I first opened, I had Penn and Teller do the show.
Oh wow,
cool. Friends of mine. Yeah, we did a groundbreaking ceremony. Where Penn and Teller cast their hand and footprints in wet concrete and it was televised and all this stuff. And then, 6 months later, they came back and did the show for the opening. And it was a ton of press. I had, all the U.S., a lot of, the Entertainment Tonight, Extra, all those kind of things. We had a lot of celebrities attend. And we got launched really with a great amount of publicity, really thanks to Penn and Teller. And I had met them actually when I was in the D.C. area doing the two-man show with Bob Sheets. They popped in one day, and that's how I met them. They were doing actually the Renaissance Fair in Cumberland, Maryland. It's about 1980 or something like that, or 81 maybe.
Perfect.
And that's how we became friends. And so I called them that favor, and they did not only the groundbreaking, but the show. And then the first year and a half, I had other people do the show. I was trying to make sure I could get everything together,
Sure.
It took a while to, so I had Jeff McBride came several times doing, three or four weeks at a time doing a full evening show. I had Rudy Colby do a full evening show there, 6 or 8 weeks. So I was very lucky because most of these guys, I was not paying them what they probably could earn elsewhere. But on the other hand, they also got to do their full evening show, which usually they were more acts than shows.
Sure.
And so anyway, that's kind of the, how I got it started and some of the details. That's kind of the shorthand, the cliff notes.
So when people are down in Santa Monica, where can they find Magicopolis?
Well, Magicopolis is at 1418 4th Street in Santa Monica. The box office number is 310-451-2241. And if you go to magicopolis.com, it has pictures, reviews, videos. And the Twitter is at Magicopolis. We also have a Facebook page. It's the one that's Magicopolis that has the monkey on it. There are some other generic and Wikipedia-inspired ones, but the one that has the monkey as the icon is the one that's, you know, has all the members in the constant, you know, posts and stuff like that.
Excellent. And how can people follow Steve Spill, know what's going on with Steve Spill personally?
Well, you know, that's the Twitter. The at Magicopolis is the Twitter. And I actually just started like a couple weeks ago. I'm normally not a big tech guy, but the publisher of my book, Skyhorse Publishing in New York, the book, of course, I Lie for Money, Candid Outrageous Stories from a Magician's Misadventures, they encouraged me to start a Twitter page just for the marketing aspect. And you see on there, you know, whatever happens to strike my fancy at that moment. There's posts on the at Magicopolis, you know, period, daily, you know.
Excellent.
Some of them, I should tell you, are not actually posted by me, but by a publicist that works for the Skyhorse Publishing. But most of them I post. And if I don't like the ones that they post, I erase them. So.
Well, there you go. Anyways, and of course, we can always find that book by going through atwoodmagic.com and clicking on the Amazon banner, and people are going to get it at no extra charge. They're going to get the same great book at the same great price. We just get a little love here.
Yeah, anyways, as a matter of fact, if you buy today, if you buy right now, there's like a $6 or $7 advance purchase discount off the hardcover book, which is, you know, what's on the Amazon now. And you'll see lots of great praise from guys like Dick Cavett and Penn and Teller and stuff like that. So don't take it from me. Don't take it from Dave or Steve of the Dave Atwood Show. Go there, see these guys that tell you it's a great book, and go ahead and buy it. Now would be a good time.
Excellent. Well, Steve, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
All right. You take care.
All right, buddy.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
That's Steven Spill for you.
Holy crow.
A little bit of everything with that interview, eh?
Wow. It sounds like he's worked with just about everybody, though, too. You know, he's talking about the people at the castle and different names at Magicopolis. Just incredible, incredible.
Well, Penn and Teller.
Yeah,
and McBride. Di Vernon. He grew up as the boy in the Magic Castle with Di Vernon. I mean, that's amazing, yeah. Right there. But, yeah, it was so great for him to stop by and chat with us and talk about his book, I Lie for Money. And again, folks, I mean, this sounds, I mean, just from the interview itself, it sounds like it's going to be an amazing, eye-popping book. So make sure you get it. You can get the hardcover right now. He's got that discount going on right now. If you order it today through atwoodmagic.com, you click on the Amazon banner, it takes you there. You're going to get that book. And of course, he also has his Kindle version if you just want to be Mr. Old Tech and Bio Green and all that stuff. That's good too. We love any of it.
Either way, yeah, either way.
It's all good. Anyways, whew.
Yeah, that was a big one. That was a great one.
That was a great interview.
Oh,
and
so much fun to talk with
him. Mean, I will never look at Bill and Lemon again.
Not the same one?
Nope. I'd never do that again. Anyways, folks, thank you so much for listening. That was a lot of fun. And again, if you want to support our show, go to atwoodmagic.com, click on any one of our sponsors' banners, and it doesn't cost you any more. You get the same great products at the same great low price. We just get a little love. Anyways, folks, on behalf of everyone here, Stephen Spill, Stephen Hignett, myself, David, John Atwood. Remember, if you want to make the world a better place, love your kids.
Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDaveAtwoodShow. And follow us on Twitter at Dave Atwood Show. Everything you ever wanted to know about the Dave Atwood Show, including live events, merchandise, and contact information, is now available at atwoodmagic.com. We'll be right back.